Hey, we're the Cranberry Merchants.
And you're listening to Indie Star Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Indie Star Insider. We take you behind the scenes to get to know the independent artists that make up the Indie Star Nation. Live every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Pacific and on demand on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
This week's featured guests, Steve and Diane Moore from the Cranberry Merchants.
The first motion picture studio ever set up in the world was in the yard of my laboratory at West Orange. The building revolved to follow the sun. We dubbed it the Black Mariah.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are, wherever you may be listening. This is Indie Star Insider, episode 56. I'm your host, Alan Wayne. And today's or tonight's guest, whenever you may be listening, is one of the more unique and, I just got to say it, joyful acts that we have on Indie Star Radio. And the reason I say that is because they are so grateful. They're so socially, I guess you could say, engaged with their audience. And they put out really good, different music. I'm always on the look for something different that's catchy, that has a hook, that will drag you in. What you just heard there was the Black Mariah that introduced me to the Cranberry Merchants. And right now we have Steve and Diane on the line. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. How are you, sir?
Doing great.
Doing, doing great. There's so much to get into with you guys because you have such a long history of music. But I'd like to start asking, as we do with all artists, individually, where did the spark come from to become musicians? Diane, would you like to start us off?
Okay. Well, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, you know, was a teenager in the 80s, which was an amazing time to be a teenager because there was so much wonderful music out at that time. So I grew up listening to a lot of, I guess you could say that, you know, a very eclectic mix of stuff that was in the 80s, the pop, the new wave, the heavy metal. So all of that really influenced me. And I started playing drums probably when I was about 15, 16 years old. And was just, you know, so inspired by all the wonderful music that was out at that time.
Mm, drums. I started around that time myself. That's when my love for the drums came from. And still to this day, even though I don't get to play much, I still love sitting behind a kit and banging some out. So did you have any bands that you were in, Diane, as a high schooler? Or did it start when you and Steve got hitched?
Actually, well, as far as actually writing, it was when we got together. We both went to school at the Art Institute of Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
They had a music business program. And so it was kind of like a trade school type college. And that's actually where we met. And, you know, while we were studying, you know, promotion and recording and, you know, video editing and all that kind of stuff. That's, you know, how we got together. And a couple of years after we graduated is when we got married.
Cool.
And we were in a band shortly after that. We were in a band called Halcyon AD.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with, we had one other person. We had a guitarist that was with us. And we brought in a couple other friends that we knew from school and elsewhere. And we recorded some demos at that time, and we got a little bit of play, like on local college radio in the Atlanta
mm-hmm.
market.
Mm-hmm.
Never really went too far beyond that, just because, you know, we were kind of living the life of a starving artist, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it's hard after a while financially to keep that up.
Oh, definitely. Oh, totally.
But, you know, that was kind of, you know, our first jump into it where, you know, we kind of got our feet wet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Steve, what was your spark? When did you start playing and start massaging this talent you have?
First I should say I'm 6 years older than Diane. So we have that almost kind of a little bit of a generational difference. I was a teenager in the late 70s, early 80s.
Ah.
So I'm, you know, coming off a lot of the classic rock kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
My brother John had gotten me into a lot of that with, you know, the four basic food groups of like Beatles, Rolling Stones, Who, Led Zeppelin, that kind of thing.
four basic food groups. I love that.
You know,
yeah.
he was actually into a lot of stuff like, you know, Kiss, Rush, Judas Priest, Aerosmith, that kind of thing. And, I gotten into rock music through his record collection, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And started getting some ideas in my head, but didn't really know how to get them out until my friend Mark could show me how to play guitar some.
Hmm.
And at the time, I wasn't very, well, I'll be honest, I wasn't very good on it because you want to be, you know, you basically want to be Jimmy Page overnight, and that doesn't happen.
That's true.
I think Mark realized that, and he's like, you know, you ought to try playing bass. It's like, you think I stink on this, don't you? Okay, I'll play bass instead. And, you know, so I would kind of bounce back and forth between both of them. But it took a few years after that before I was actually getting my own ideas. I mean, any kind of a big idea out. But, I mean, it's mainly because of, like I said, my brother John and my friend Mark.
Cool. And so you played the bass, and from there kind of worked up to the guitar and worked with those together, or was it like you played guitar, you stopped, and then you went to the bass, kind of went back to the basics, using a very bad pun, and then went back to the guitar? Is that how that worked?
I think think I kind of bounced back and forth. I mean, when, you know, in high school, if someone needed a bass player for a talent show or a variety show or something like that, I had some friends who would ask me and I would play bass for that. But at home, it felt more comfortable to play the guitar and write bass parts on the guitar. Then, you know, I'd flesh them out later on the actual instrument after that. But more often than not, I guess I probably would write on the guitar, but I would bounce back and forth between both. After our guitarist had taken off, you know, in Halcyon AD, I went ahead and took over both instruments. But I mean, before that, it was just bass.
Yeah, and can't exactly do that live unless you're Geddy Lee, you know, from one instrument to the other.
Kind of
difficult. But that is really cool in the upbringing. So you crazy kids got married when meeting in college. Classic story there. After college, and when you had Halcyon AD going on, and you both can, one or the other can answer this question. What was it like to get into the studio for the first time as musicians? Was it like old hat because you went to school, or was it still kind of a trip?
Oh, it was totally a trip. I mean, getting to go into the studio in college, I mean, you're having to work with, it's more clinical. You're having to work with someone else's material and edit this together and learn how to process this and that and everything. But this was all our stuff that we wrote. And, you know, we're playing and you kind of nurture it from being, you know, just nothing into, you know, an organic kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, a lot different when, you know, when we were in school, you're of course being graded on the technical side, you know, of your talents and not, you know, with the creative side. So, you know, the stuff that we recorded for this EP was actually, you know, all done in a home studio. So, you know, it was nice to have that complete creative control in just, you know, not just the recording side of it, but, you know, we could do everything, you know, creative and technical to make it sound like we wanted it to sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have a leg up there, and especially recording, would this be in the late 80s or early 90s when you recorded with Halcyon AD?
This would have been like early to mid-90s.
Early to mid-90s. Back before the tools such as GarageBand were available, and Audacity and Adobe and all those different recording devices. How was it recording back then? I'm sure there was digital recording equipment, but it wasn't, I don't think it was as easy as it is now, was it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, there was, but there's nothing we could afford. So.
Yeah. That's when we go back to the starving artist part. We, you know, for our demos, we just had like our little Tascam 4-track recorder and, you know, that's how we got our ideas and everything down. But, you know, it makes a big difference now, you know, that you can do so much on your home computer. You know, to be able to, you know, remaster all of that stuff digitally. And I mean, you know, and it's not just the audio side of it, because our videos were done the same way. Totally on our home computer. So, I mean, you know, there are things that we can do now that there's no way we could have afforded to do back then. Not of this kind of quality.
Yeah. And I was thinking maybe back to, You were saying the Tascam recorder, which, by the way, those things are amazing. They're great products, fairly affordable. Love Tascam recorders. I was thinking like you were doing analog or reel to reel. I was thinking, gee whiz, they had an analog or reel to reel setup going on, and that must have been crazy. So Halcyon AD goes the way of, well, basically you do a few shows, you record, you play on college stations, and you know, basically you have to find a way to make a living. This was in the mid 90s. Fast forward 22 years, 21 years, and you're the Cranberry Merchants. Give us a little bit of the timeline from when that happened. Were you always involved in music, always recording, doing one thing or the other? Or was it like you stopped Halcyon, you took a break, and then one day you're just like, let's do this again?
Well,
it is sort of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, there for quite a long time, there were, you know, life just happened. And, you know, you have financial responsibilities, you have family responsibilities that, you know, kind of get, you know, where it pushes music to the back burner for a long time. I'll let Steve tell you about kind of what prompted us to start doing this when we did. Just this past year.
Well, like Diane said, I mean, we had a lot of things that kind of kept us from it for a number of years, but I needed to get knee surgery this past fall, and knowing that that was coming, we set the ball in motion to, well, if we take this opportunity right now, we can go do all the video stuff for the Black Mariah and get that ball rolling, and by the time I'm actually out on medical leave, we can be doing this and we can be doing that, and we're getting all of our lists of links in place. And
he was getting a whole 3 months off of work at one shot.
So basically, I got to sit there on the couch with a big ice pack on my knee after I got knee replacement surgery, and I'm just, you know, working all these links that I can on my phone, and you know, setting up different accounts with, you know, YouTube and Instagram and Twitter, and, you know, we try to get the whole social media ball rolling, and it was crazy, but I mean, everything just happened to fall into place where it's like, we have this great opportunity to, you know, to basically fire up the furnace again, let's do this.
And to put all of our time into it.
Yeah, it's like, let's do this. Like, we just kind of rechristened ourselves as the Cranberry Merchants and came back out swinging.
That is great. That is great. And that's an example of life giving you an opportunity to do that, because I work 40 hours a week and I do this radio station, you know, and I understand what, and I have two kids and I could go just tons of different things going on, but I would kill to have knee surgery at that point, because I could catch up.
His coworkers were jealous of him.
My coworkers were all jealous of me, wishing that they were going out too. I was just, it was wonderful. It was, I mean, physical therapy is what it is, but I mean, like I said, I'm kicked back in the recliner with a big ice pack on my knee and covered up in caps and just working links on my foot. It was like vacation, really, in a lot of ways. It was wonderful.
That is so cool. To be able to have that space to be creative and to do things is absolutely fantastic. With you know, you have a set timeline, but it's a lot of time, so you're able to get so much done. Where did the name Cranberry Merchants come from? That's an interesting name.
So that comes from my late father. He was a very colorful person. He was somebody who had a lot of have his own personal catchphrases where they're all his, and I'd never heard or seen them from anyone else. One of his biggest ones, my favorite one, is if someone was telling a huge lie to his face, or if he's watching a politician on TV or whatever, he'd say, he's got more BS than a cranberry merchant. And I'm like, band name. <You know? laughs>
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm okay. My brain is processing that imagery here for a second, and I'm just picturing I'm picturing a guy with a sack of cranberries going door to door saying, "Hey, everybody, check it out. I have a sack of cranberries right here. You won't get these anywhere else." And I'm thinking, where in the world did he come up with that? Was he gypped by a guy who was selling cranberries?
I kind of wonder. I mean, well, Dad was of the Depression era generation, that, you know, he was born in that time. So maybe it was. Maybe it was some dude going around selling cranberries. Dad had a bad run-in. I don't know. He never said. He used that catchphrase all the time, and I just loved it.
Cranberry, you know,
it's
merchant.
Like, okay.
yeah, it's so random, because I mean, of the thousands of berries and fruits that are in the world, you know, orange merchant, lemon merchant, you know, blueberry merchant, raspberry merchant. I mean, I could go a strawberry merchant. I go on and on, but a cranberry merchant, and just knowing
so apparently
my,
all the other,
yeah.
Well, apparently all the other fruit merchants that came around to the farm, I guess, were cool. But the cranberry guy was a jerk. I don't know.
Well, I know one thing. Cranberries are hard to grow. You need a certain type of land to grow. You need basically a pond to grow cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way they grow and they float. And it's a real process. That's why cranberry juice is more expensive than any other juice. Because it's a very expensive process. So, yeah, I'm weird. I like to dig into little things like that. But my interviewing muse, I guess you could say, Huell Hauser, who would ask all sorts of questions that were just completely off the topic and just do it in that Southern drawl. If you ever get a chance, check him out. He's really cool. So you pick up this name from the Depression era, everything else. So going back into it about 22 years later, your first impression before the Black Mariah is even released, before anything, you just have this idea. It's your baby. It's this little baby. You have this idea. What was your first impression of how things are now as compared to when you guys were in school?
Oh, my goodness.
It's day and night. absolutely different. Because, you know, back then, you really didn't have a prayer of being able to, you know, get any real traction without being signed to a record label. I mean, that was pretty much a must. You had to have that kind of backing to you know, tap into any kind of real publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now, you know, we saw the opportunities out there with all of these internet radio stations, with YouTube, with just social media in general. Mm-hmm. And you can literally overnight have a global audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone on internet radio, there's a home for every kind of music out there. I had no idea until we started, you know, getting into it, really digging in. Any kind of rock you want to listen to, country, hip hop. I mean, there are avenues for everything. Everybody that's so, you know, so fed up with Nashville and New York and LA and anywhere else that you're trying to submit to commercial music.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wonderful. You're all so friendly. You're all so helpful.
Oh,
back
you.
In the 90s, everyone was so rude and snotty and smarmy. And what we used to hear, if we had a dollar for every time we heard, well, you guys aren't weird enough for us to play.
What?
I can take you and your family out to dinner easy with that. So we heard that so much. We were being told that back in the 90s all the time. Pretty much our only avenues were a couple of college stations in town, and even one of them was telling us, well, your stuff's really not weird enough for us.
What?
And it's like, well, I'm not going to write something weird just to be played on your station. This is how we write. Sorry. It was crazy.
You guys aren't the Carpenters. What? I don't.
Thank you.
I don't get this. I'm sitting here, and if you could see the expression on my face, it is that, you know, that what that lady from Mad TV, that, huh, you know, trying to process.
Well, but keep in mind that I'm also referring, you know, when I refer to that, I'm also talking about the grunge era.
Oh.
And during the grunge era, everybody's still all angry about all the 80s music that, thank God, we buried. Now we have to have something new. But everybody wanted the same. We have to have something different. Everybody wants the same different music. So it's like, okay, well, we don't write like that. I'm still, from where I came up in, I'm a four-chord rock and roll kind of guy. Diane is a very, you know, Duran kind of writer herself. And it's like, this isn't our thing. We're sorry, but we write like this.
Yeah.
See? And now, I mean, our kind of stuff is getting played. Well, we've been played between Jimmy Page and Montrose on another station. It's like, you're hearing all this kind of music that Di and I both grew up on. We're being played alongside of that on some programs. And it's like, you weren't hearing that back then. It was, you had to be,
yeah, because quite honestly, the college radio at the time, the stuff we were getting played with was really just a lot of crap.
It was.
And now, you know, we were. And I mean, we were being lumped in with it. And now, I mean, we are getting played alongside such amazing musicians.
Oh my God.
On these internet radio stations. I mean, there's real good quality music now that, you know, the college stations then, they never would have, you know, seen it at all at that time.
No way.
So in that way, it's very different, too.
Yeah.
I remember the college radio stations of that time. I was a teenager at that time, and I remember the college radio stations. And, yeah, a lot of it was this offbeat kind of alternative offshoot genre type situation where,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, the only thing I heard that really stuck with me on college radio was bands like Lightning Seeds, REM, that was way back though. It was always this fringe stuff, and they were trying so much to be kooky, different, and I was just,
yeah,
thank you.
You're right, it's a lot of it was just noise, it wasn't any good, but
yeah, so much of it sounded like it had been recorded on a close and play cassette recorder.
Yeah.
but see, that was the hipsters of the time, though. The hipsters of the time were like, this is raw music, man. You know, it's like, it still sounds like crap.
Thank you. I mean. If you had, like, a commercial rock station, say, you know, a straight-up kind of whatever Van Halen gets played on or whatever, you had one local music show, and if it's Billy's local music show, you've got to know Billy, you've got to butter up Billy, you've got to be best friends with Billy, mm-hmm. or he's not going to play your song. And, you know, it's only 1 hour a week, and it's only Billy, and that's it.
Exactly.
You know, so
usually it was college music. Usually Billy's a douche canoe, you know, he's a real jerk. You know, king of the crap pile, I guess you could say, walks into the, I used to promote shows, and I'd run into these guys. They'd be king of the crap pile wearing their sunglasses at night with their name on their jacket or some garbage. And people all fed into their ego because they wanted the bands to be played on their special nights. And they'd show up at the bar, and I just look at this guy and go, what a douche canoe. This guy's a real, you know. And I'd hear his show, and it was always like, yes, this is Billy's Music Hour, the most awesome local music. And then you'd hear something that was just complete trash, but you were supposed to like it because it wasn't produced well. It wasn't produced it was produced using a small cassette recorder from an answering machine from 1985. And it's like, this was produced by a fast food speaker, you know? So it's like, blah, 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 and that's like avant-garde garbage. And I'm just like, it wasn't a part of that scene, but I can completely identify with what you're talking about. Garbage. So you were making good music, and they said, you need to be more garbage. I get that.
That's pretty much it.
Hey, can you crap that up a little bit? You know, maybe drop something while we're recording. You guys are too produced. Can you have someone pass gas on there? Just, you know, so somebody can hear it. And it's just like, ugh. So now we're in this great time where music is freely distributed. And there are hundreds of internet radio stations out there plugging music away. And yet, some artists are a little bit upset that they're not able to make a living at it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, of course, every artist wants to be able to make some kind of living off of it. But, you know, I think we're going into this more realistically because, I mean, there's a huge amount of competition. There are so many artists doing this. And, you know, I think you really have to, be in it first of all for the music itself. And, you know, if we do happen to get a royalty check or two from it, then that's the icing on the cake is kind of the way we're looking at it. you know, if more happens with it, great. But, you know, in the meantime, we're having a lot of fun doing this.
And, right now, like Diane said, I mean, it's a great big garden, and we're just spending a lot of time planting seeds right now and just trying to make some sunflowers come up.
Sunflowers, kind of what it's all about.
You got to take time with that.
Absolutely. And I posted on Facebook last night the best piece of advice from those consultants I told you about. It takes years.
Yeah.
If you do make it at all, it takes years. So I'm like, I just have to keep on with that same voice too. It takes years. It keeps me, keeps me in line. So you're back in this new digital internet, social media, free sharing, you know, summer of love for music type thing where everybody gets their stuff out there. And, you write a song called The Black Mariah. I have to say that I'm slightly obsessed with this song. I'm not joking. I'm obsessed with the song. I'm obsessed with Steve's characterization, the oldie time circus wrangler outfit he has on. I love the dance. I love the cut shots. I love the video. And I love the sound because it reminds me of something that I would hear on Rodney on the Rock at 3:30 a.m. and out here in Los Angeles. It is so unique and so different, which is why when somebody said you need to be more different, I was like, "Huh?" So tell us how the Black Mariah came to be. I mean, was it just a story you liked when you were younger, or was it just something you read on Wiki that you were like, "Wow, this is cool"? What was the whole foundation for the Black Mariah and the song and video that followed?
The song itself, the song itself is from 1997. We wrote the song back then. It was done on, I just got the new foot pedal and, you know, take the thing through its paces to see what each of the effects does, what's it sound like on this and that. And I got to an effect that it was a really dirty distortion, really a dirty kind of rusty distortion sounding patch. It's basically what gives the track its sound, its guitar sound. And I was taking it through its paces and, you know, showing Diane what it would do. And we tinkered around with it. And I had started playing the kind of hook riff from it, what's going on under the verses. And she thought it sounded kind of like a rusty old machine. And
yes,
she had come up with a drum program to go underneath it.
Something to sound mechanical with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we had just, it was really a grand experiment in minimalism that just, like, totally paid off. We weren't trying to do anything special with it.
Well, at the time, it was just kind of circumstances coming together at that point. When writing that song, we had just happened to see a documentary on TV about Thomas Edison.
Uh-huh.
And they talked about, you know, the Black Mariah and some of the first performers that were there, because these were the first people to ever be in motion pictures ever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we thought that was really interesting because we had never heard that story before at the time. And, you know, we were kind of like, well, you know, why don't we know about this? And, you know, why has, like, like a motion picture never been made of this story, or, you know, no one's ever talked about it. So we kind of just started fooling around with it. And being that we had this piece of music that had this kind of, I guess you could say almost this old kind of steampunk sound to it. It kind of went with the subject matter.
Yeah. So that's a great description, by the way.
So we kind of we rolled with it, and, you know, and started, you know, writing some lyrics. We did a little research. We even, you know, at the time, that was before Google was handy, so we actually took a book out of the library.
Say what?
Yeah, I know. Back in the olden days.
Wait a minute. So next thing you're going to tell me is that you found it by pulling a card out of out of some, you know, I mean, some kind of, did. Yeah, the Dewey Decimal System. You found mm-hmm. Found the book that way. That's going back a little bit, but yeah, that's the way it was done. Okay, so many questions I have because I'm kind of one of those fans, you know, with all these questions like bottled up in my head about the Black Mariah. But one question I have first, what effect is that on the guitar? Is it a flange with a distortion backing or can you describe it, or was it just I stomped this pedal, that pedal, that pedal, and magic?
No, it all came out of one pedal. I actually need to go down and find which pedal it was. It all came out of one pedal. It was a particular effect. In fact, the same foot pedal is what gave it was a different effect on the same foot pedal that gave us the bass sound on In the Blood. Whatever this particular one was for Black Mariah, it pretty much gave the exact sound that you hear on record, but what is making it, I think, a little bit more dirty is when I was recording the vocals, I had headphones on so I could hear the song, but they were only on one ear. So it was coming out of the headphones and kind of tracking back on top itself. Mm. In fact, you hear that, you hear...
Because it gives it a slight phasing effect, and that really kind of gives it that unique sound.
You can hear that more, in fact, if you go to YouTube and check out the credits video. It only rolls for like a minute or so.
It's an instrumental version, and you can hear it more.
Yeah. It becomes more apparent then. But it was all from one particular pedal. We didn't have to do much EQ on that. It just happened to come out sounding like that.
Yeah, that's a great accidental piece of engineering and piece of production. Kind of reminds me of Marty Robbins' Don't Worry, the first distorted guitar was because the guy blew a tube and that's how it came out.
Oh,
Marty's
wow.
like, Marty's like, oh, hey, he was like, should I stop? You know, cause they did things back in the 60s and wonder. And he's just like, just keep going. And it's just this like really dirty brown, brown, brown. And you're like, you know, the mother of invention is necessity, and they needed to get that track done, and it created distortion. Great happy accident there. Diane, the drum beat for Black Mariah, being a drummer, that is a pretty cool beat. Do you think you could replicate it on a set if you tried? I don't think I could.
Well, it would have to be on an electronic kit, because on acoustic drums, it wouldn't work. It's actually not, you know, a very difficult beat. I wrote it on a drum machine, but I mean, it's actually pretty simple. It's except for that little drum solo part, you know, in the middle, it's pretty much the same, you know, like four measures over and over again. Yeah. But for most of the song, I didn't really want to embellish it too much because I wanted it to keep that very mechanical sound it just works for that groove.
It really does. I mean, what got me on this was just the sound of it, the electronic drums, how well they meshed with that guitar. I mean, that is, it was a genius stroke by you guys, a song about a genius, and it was a genius stroke in production. Have you gotten any haters about that? Because when the first thing I saw when I saw Edison, I thought Tesla. Have you heard anybody say anything about Tesla? Like, Tesla rules, man.
If somebody's got a problem with us as far as that song in Tesla, they can either talk to the band Tesla or band AC/DC. I don't know who else to talk to. We can't help you.
Yeah, no, and the thing is that I think most of the rivalry between, you know, Edison and Tesla has to do with, you know, choosing a form of electricity and who gets the credit for that. And really, I mean, the Black Mariah itself has nothing to do with all of that. So
yeah, Tesla was
completely different technology.
The only haters we've got, there have been a couple people on make a comment like, that's not a very good song. I think on YouTube, I think they're like, five thumbs down or something. Yeah, it can't satisfy.
And I think it's people that don't really understand what the song is about.
Right.
Probably.
So, you know, it's like, and not everybody really cares to find out. A lot of people want, you know, the mindless subject matter, and they don't want to hear about history. So, you
that's
know.
True.
Whatever.
That's true. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's how you got to look at it. Like, whatever. Who cares?
Exactly.
Where did you find the Edison shirt, Steve?
I think Diane ordered that through the mail from the Edison site, was it?
No, it was actually through a company that they just sold novelty T-shirts. And I found that Edison went online because we were trying to think of something for Steve to wear when he was, you know, playing the guitar parts. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I wonder if there's some kind of Edison shirt. And I found that one. So, we just so he would kind of be represented in that, in those shots.
Perfect. It was perfect. And where did you find the late 1800s Circus Barker suit that you're wearing, Steve? Where did you find
that was at a thrift store across town. We found the entire suit at a thrift store. I don't know whose grandpa
we told ourselves we're going to go out and look for the ugliest suit we can possibly find.
And we found it.
I think it's incredible. I think it's incredible because it suits your vocals, because you're kind of barking out the vocals about Edison, you know, you're barking out the vocals. You're like a carnival barker, and you look like a carnival barker.
Well, that was really the only way to make the lyrics work. I mean, there wasn't, when we put all the words down and, you know, we were starting to invent the vocal melodies to the song, there was no way to actually sing it. You don't need a singing voice for it. I mean, you know, Freddie Mercury couldn't have done anything with it to make it sound pretty. It's like, you kind of have to have someone who's announcing things.
Yes.
So we came up with that Barker idea.
And it suited that time period as well.
Exactly.
To have that kind of a character.
It's very rare that a song and a video come together and it all just meshes and fits. And this is one of those rare moments. And I got to say, I admire the hell out of you guys for doing that.
Thank you.
Amazing. So one more question about the Black Mariah, and then we'll move on to In the Blood, which we're going to hear at the conclusion of this interview. Did you travel to New Jersey to, because I did reading up on the Black Mariah, and that right now it's the original one was destroyed in a fire, so it's a replica there. But did you travel? You must have traveled there, I imagine, right?
We did. Back in September, yeah. In fact, there's a making of the Black Mariah video over on YouTube. Mm-hmm. For the listeners to check out. But yeah, we had traveled up to West Orange, New Jersey back in September, because the way we saw it as far as making a video went, we had to have that building, we had to have a location shot, or it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
So yeah, we traveled up there and got a video permit, and they gave us a 5-hour block to shoot with, and we probably got all of our shots in about half that time.
Yeah, cool. Probably about 2.5 hours, and because we had to get a permit through the National Park Service and everything. And but, yeah, I mean, they were really nice about it, you know, giving us access to the building, you know, while the park was closed.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have to, you know, have tourists hanging around while we were doing it. But, we got to use that replica to get all those shots of Steve in front of it.
You even got to shoot inside on one of the shots. So.
Yeah, yeah, that's so cool. That is so cool that you guys did that. You went all in for that, and man, great work on that. I'm such a fan of that track. I just can't tell you. Now, In the Blood.
Thank you.
In the Blood, Diane sings on this, and a very lovely voice. What was the inspiration for In the Blood, Diane?
Well, this song, it was actually, the lyrics were written also, you know, a good 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's really ironic that, you know, that was a very different time politically than where we're at now, yet the lyrics seem more relevant now than they did then. The song is, you know, it's kind of written in a more abstract manner, but it's basically about, you know, holding to one's beliefs against the pressure of society telling you that, no, this is the trendy thing to think now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to change moral standards as a whole, and kind of the hypocrisy of all of that, because, you know, everybody thinks they're right, but, you know, tries to shove it down your throat. And, and you know, which, as we know, is a thing right now.
Oh, big time. Big time. I can't stand politics right now. Both sides.
Yeah.
Both sides can go to hell as far as I'm concerned, man. I don't even pay attention to any of it because it's all just wash. I mean, as long as my paychecks are coming every 2 weeks, I don't need to know what our president's tweeting or what a silly thing our Senate's doing. I just noise. And you're right about that. It's very, very prevalent nowadays. But you also said that there was a song that it was a song that was of the time. And right away I thought of Scorpion's Winds of Change. Have you heard that song?
Yeah.
It's similar to that where, yes, it was about that time, the Berlin Wall and fall of communism, but it can definitely be used in other times. And I think In the Blood's about the same as far as that goes. Any special stories about production of this song or the video or anything like that?
Well, I mean, the video for this one was actually done mostly in our home. Mm-hmm. There were a few, you know, outdoor shots where, you know, like where you see the street preacher. That was a friend of ours that did that for us.
That's cool.
But most of it was filmed in the house. And it's really kind of funny because, you know, because there's a lot of special graphic effects, it's, you know, most of it is digital, of course, but, you know, most people, when you do a video, you know, they think you rent a big sound stage and you get all this expensive lighting. And, you know, we got Clarence Christmas lights to create a lot of those effects.
Yeah, that.
And
yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, that's the DIY ingenuity. I mean, with the technology as it is now, you can do those things, I think. The technology more than makes up for the need for expensive lights and things like that. It really makes up for it. And not to mention hours and hours of shooting to get that right shot. So, but yeah, it's a great song. Really, really like it. I can't go into the depth of the Black Mariah because the Black Mariah just stabbed me in the brain. I'm like, oh, you know, but it is a great song. And we're very happy to play it. Now, what's next for you guys? Cranberry Merchants, you got two songs out, planning on putting any more out. What are you guys going to be doing, from here on in?
We're about to start. Well, we've already started work on video number 3 for the instrumental song Going Nowhere. Otherwise, past that, we have some more filming to do on that over the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. But past that?
We're hoping to, you know, to get back and do some more writing here soon, maybe towards the end of the year, you know, have some new stuff out. But like Steve said, we're working on the video for Going Nowhere, which is the song actually originally had some lyrics. We weren't real happy with the vocal take on it, but we really liked the instrumentation.
The energy of it.
Yeah. And what the title refers to is it's about taking a road trip, which is one of our favorite things to do. We like to take cross-country road trips.
That's cool.
And, you know, the kind of thing where you hit the open road. It doesn't even matter if you have a destination or not, just, you know, going out there and seeing something different. So that's kind of the direction we're going with that.
It kind of gets you with your best friend. It doesn't matter where you're going kind of thing. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
And you crazy kids just recently celebrated an anniversary. So
we did.
Congratulations. Congratulations on that. What's it
Thank
like?
You.
And you guys can both answer this. What's it like to work with your spouse, to work with your best friend on something, on music and projects such as this?
I've always felt it came very naturally. I mean, I guess
yeah.
maybe because it's music that brought us together to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, I don't know. It's always just felt very natural. We've always had that chemistry with music, aside from, you know, just personality. It's kind of the original glue that held us together. So it's always just felt like, you know, just very natural, like it should be.
Yeah.
And it's also that kind of Fleetwood Mac element where I always get to go out with somebody else in the band. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. The Fleetwood Mac. Oh man. What a mess that's turned out to be, right? Lindsey Buckingham gets kicked out and then has a heart attack or something. Oof.
Yeah, it's like, what was that?
Oh, that's crazy. And I always thought Lindsey was kind of, I know that the Mick Fleetwood and those guys, whatever, but I always thought Lindsey was, the dynamic between Lindsey and Stevie was what made Fleetwood Mac really, really hum. And that's,
yeah, he seemed to be the engine that really made it go. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate that they're both kind of angry because Fleetwood Mac's still touring, you know, and it's like, it's crazy. So don't turn into Fleetwood Mac, you guys, you know, and
no.
get all embittered.
Well, it
and...
helps that there's just the two of us, though, you know.
Exactly. So I'd like you to take this moment to let the listening audience know where they can find you on social media and otherwise. So the floor is yours.
All right. Well, we are on all the major social platforms. You can find us on Facebook very easily, on Twitter at CranberryMerch2. We're also on Instagram. Please check out our YouTube channel. I mean, that's where you'll see the video for Black Mariah. There's also a credits video, lyrics video, and a making of for that song. For In the Blood, there's also a lyrics video besides the main one. And of course, you know, now you can find us on a lot of internet radio stations, including Indie Star Radio.
Yes, indeed. And you can also find this interview on iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, a few different the radio station, of course. A few different platforms that I'm forgetting. So this will definitely get out there. You know, I had a question. 770 area code. You guys are in the Atlanta area, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I will be out there in August. And I would love to meet you guys in person.
We would love to meet you in person.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, it's for ISA.
ISA, yes. Are you going to the ISA show or...
We were thinking about maybe going to the awards show. And especially if you're going to be there, that'll give us that much more reason to be there.
Absolutely.
Hey, I'm flying out there and I hate flying. So this is something my wife told me. She says, you have to do this. And I said, no, I don't. Just like when she told me you have to go see this band live. No, I don't. And I know she's not trying to get rid of me. She's trying to get me out there and get my name out there. So, Steve, isn't it wonderful to have supportive spouses?
Absolutely is.
Oh,
absolutely is.
No matter what you do, no matter what stupidity, no matter what goes on, they're always there for you. And it really helps you kind of be your own person in a way. I've noticed that when you're married to the right person, you can be your own person. There's no issue there. And it's great.
Sure.
So guys, you are a pleasure to talk to. I'm grateful for your support. Thank you for letting me profile you this afternoon or evening, whenever anybody's listening. And I just want to say that you're always a part of the nation. So thank you so much for all your support, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
No problem. Here's In the Blood from the Cranberry Merchants here on Indie Star Radio and Indie Star Insider.
Today is what you make it. Make it as original as your personal playlist. Only Community Coffee is made with four generations of family care and responsibly sourced premium coffee beans, expertly blended and roasted to rich, smooth perfection. Visit communitycoffee.com to learn more and make it great. Make it community. Pick up our signature blend dark roast at your local grocery store today.
The big wireless companies sold you an outdated plan tied to long-term contracts and mystery fees. Simple Mobile's different. You get a lightning-fast 4G LTE nationwide network with no contract, ever. And keep the phone and number you love. Just text the word BYOP to 611611 to see if your phone is compatible. Simple Mobile. Out with the old, in with the simple.
Standard text, message, and data rates may apply based on your mobile phone service. Please refer always to the privacy policy at simplemobile.com/privacy policy and the terms and conditions at simplemobile.com/terms and conditions.